Welcome to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. This is Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack. And today's installment, we're going to be dropping in at the Stearns History Museum's Breakfast Club, where just recently they hosted Dr. Lori Olfertz, St. Cloud State University professor and former women's basketball coach, and Carol Howe Veenstra, the former director of athletics at the College of St. Benedict's and a volleyball coach, as they talked about Title IX, a look back and a look ahead. They shared their experiences from being young girls who were interested in sports and what they had to contend with, all the way to the way it is now, after almost 50 years of Title IX being a law. For those who are unfamiliar with exactly what Title IX says, the law states that no person in the United States shall, on the basis of sex, be excluded from participation in, be denied the benefits of, or be subjected to discrimination under any education program or activity receiving federal financial assistance. And while their presentation focused mainly on athletics, Title IX has had a great impact upon our society, simply by making things equal. And as we listen in to excerpts from the Breakfast Club presentation, you'll be able to hear some of the crowd laughing a bit here and there as these women share their experiences, because others in the crowd have also had these experiences and understand what it was like before there was a law that said that boys had to share. And we'll start off with Carol Howe Veenstra here on the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota.
So I grew up Crosby, Ironton. And my first real sport experience was fifth grade, the summer. Mom says, head on up, I hear there's a track meet. I think she wanted me out of the house. Well, I could run and I could jump. And that's what we needed to do. So I competed. And we did pretty well. I got some ribbons. It was this red ribbon with magic marker on it. But I kept them all. They're in my scrapbook. I was excited, I was proud, and I couldn't wait to compete again. The top performers were selected to compete at the next level, which was a meet held here, St. Cloud, at South Junior High. A huge bus ride, very exciting for me at that age, if you can imagine, getting out and then seeing so many girls and boys ready to compete. I was so nervous, but I can run, and I could jump, and I did. And I came home with like fancy ribbons that were printed, and some blue ones. It was amazing. This experience gave me a lot of confidence. So in junior high, senior high, I joined GAA. It was an opportunity to learn a lot about a variety of sports one day a week after school. And on Saturdays, the play days were the best, where we invited some local towns to join us. And given that I love sweets, we ended the afternoon with lemonade and lots of cookies. So I loved it. We had a physical education teacher who was way ahead of her time. During my last 2 years, she began organizing games with other towns, like real games. Of course, we played in the girls' gym, otherwise known as the cafeteria. A tile floor, sometimes slippery depending on custodial help after the lunch hour. Thanks to our teammates, two women in particular, who pestered our boys' basketball coach, we were allowed to play one basketball game my senior year in the boys' gym. A wood floor, a scoreboard, bleachers, and fans. Wow, it was a highlight of my senior year. I headed off to college, Brainerd, now Central Lakes, where I experienced my first real coach and athletic mentor. Under her leadership, a league was formed, and we competed with a real quality schedule. Our first year, we wore white t-shirts with the boys' hand-me-down jerseys over them. But my sophomore year, we got real uniforms. A jersey, shorts, really short, and there out on the table. And most important, maybe, was your Bell Bottom warm-up pants. They were awesome. Once we put those on, there was no question. We were going to play so much better. At Morehead State University, new funding arrived, even though I really did not understand why. Title IX had passed, but I never heard that law being mentioned. There was energy being directed to women's teams in a new way, and I was grateful for it, whether I understood it or not. Growing pains were certainly a part of every environment that I was in. As a member of our track and field team, I would call us struggling to convince the men's coach to share a lane or two. Our coach would sometimes arrive early, go grab the starting blocks, and put them in lanes and hold space for us. Fall, my senior year of college, I student taught. It was student teaching and doing a coaching practicum. I was assigned to Morehead High School and coaching volleyball. Their head coach was another amazing mentor for me. Our team competed in the region finals, and we won. And we went and participated in the very first ever state high school volleyball tournament, 1974. The Morehead Spuds finished third, and this experience confirmed that I wanted a career in coaching. After graduation, St. Cloud Tech hired me, a teacher, physical education, coaching volleyball, and coaching track and field. It was a great opportunity. Our principal was so excited to develop the girls' sports programs. Our volleyball team was talented, and we entered the playoffs, beat Morehead in the region finals, and advanced to the second ever volleyball tournament. St. Cloud State was the host site, and of course, we knew school would be called up, just like they do for boys going to state tournament, right? Well, Tech wasn't quite ready for that. You have to remember, this is the early part, and I don't think they were ready and maybe even knew about state tournaments yet for the girls. So Mother Nature had called on her to help. The night before, we had a blizzard. Seriously, a major blizzard. School was called off. That Friday morning, the sun was shining, and we had bleachers full of our fans. That was something amazing. This early success really helped us earn respect from our peers, our school, and our community. It is amazing what winning can do. I was so lucky. I had fabulous support from the male coaches and remain friends with them to this day. But it was a struggle, a big struggle, to get funding through the school district and to keep working to change and educate about Title IX. I found myself asking, you know, is there a rule that Friday nights are just reserved for boys' sports? Well, a lot happened in the 80s. Barb Carlson, raise your hand please, Barb. She's on your board, museum board. She wrote, along with others, and received a federal grant to establish a two-year position as Title IX compliance coordinator. She and her committee worked so hard to educate the city of St. Cloud, not only about equity in sports, but about equity in all aspects of education.
And that was Carol Howell-Vistra here on the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota as she spoke at the Stearns History Museum's Breakfast Club. And next, we hear from Dr. Lori Olfertz.
My athletic background was with the boys. In order to play golf, I had to wear a baseball cap, as females were not allowed on the golf course. So I played with my dad and tucked my hair up. I don't know why, I just didn't cut it off. But I tucked it up, and I would play golf and try to play a lot of golf, and no one ever knew that I was a female. The reason I was not a phenomenal athlete, it was because I grew up in some small Minnesota towns that didn't have a lot of kids on teams. And if you were halfway talented, you were picked in pickup games. And by the seventh grade, you were one of the better players. So then, I could play. So I played on the boys' teams. But my last 2 years of high school sports started in the town that I grew up in to be offered for girls. So I got to play on a girls' team. Go ahead with the slide. In college, I lettered in 4 sports. But that's not the important. That's not important. What's important is that without Title IX, without that law, I would have never received the opportunity to play sports beyond high school. And I'm not standing up here to tell you that I was better than boys, but I was better than most boys. My college freshman year, played at the University of North Dakota. We played the North Dakota State University Bison. For those of you that don't know, that's quite a big time game. So here I am, a freshman, and we're playing. It goes into overtime, 6 o'clock. The men's coach was Dave Gunther. Comes out on the court with his team, stopped the game. We had to leave the game. They had practice. Practiced around the men. Strength training just wasn't an option for women. You saw that letter up there from Beulah and May that we couldn't, lift weights and things like that because of our reproductive system. And here, I was at the University of North Dakota. We still couldn't strength train my freshman year. The budgets, the travel, the uniforms, nothing was close to what the men had. But it was getting better. The 4 years of my undergraduate was amazing. Because Carol said, we had shorts. We had a jersey. By the time I was a senior, they matched. Went on to the East Coast for graduate school. Ended up being an assistant field hockey coach. I was a graduate assistant. That was where you got your master's and you were able to coach. The staff was in Maryland. It was a huge staff of 54 in this athletic department, 4 females, 50 men. I was one of those. I learned so much. I still had to wear a baseball cap, but I learned quickly. It's the way to get a chance with that good old boys network was either be really good on the golf course or get invited to lunch or go to the bar. And I wasn't real good at lunch because that was the only time the swimming pool was open. And the bars, I wasn't as big as them. I couldn't ever handle liquor like they could. So that golf course was huge for me. But I still had to wear a baseball cap because we were allowed to golf. We were talking earlier that only Tuesdays from 10 to 2 when that golf course could bring life. After graduate school, I played professionally international basketball. But then after that, came back to the United States, and my first real job was, go back one more. My first real job was at this junior college. Well, that's right, stay there. So my first real job was a junior college basketball and volleyball coach. So at this junior college, it was a great learning experience. The staff was 20. Athletic staff, very small school as far as athletic goes. 20 males and 1 female, and I was the female. Then after that, I became the head coach at the MSUM in Moorhead, which was Moorhead State University at that time, where Carol went. I was a head coach at, female sports. Half of female sports were coached. The head coach were females. So half now. Wow, it was fun to have other female head coaches. The other half were male. Then took the St. Cloud State job, came here, and was basketball coach in 1994. There was an athletic director. Her name was Gladys Seaman. All but one female sport. So all but one, all sports for females had a head coach that was female. We even had a sports information director that was female, and we had an athletic trainer that was female. It was unbelievable. I had never worked with females. It was absolutely awesome. That lady worked very, very, very hard.
You're in tune to 88.1 FM KVSC and at the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. We just heard from Dr. Lori Olfertz as she spoke at the Stearns History Museum's Breakfast Club, along with Carol Halvistra, as they talked about Title IX, a look back and a look ahead, as this June marks the 47th anniversary of the bill's passage. To hear the entirety of the Breakfast Club presentation, You can find that audio on our website at kvsc.org under the podcast and Untold Stories of Central Minnesota tab. And as we get back into CERN's History Museum's Breakfast Club with Dr. Lori Olfertz and Carol Howe-Veenstra, they're going to go into a little greater explanation of what Title IX is all about.
Title IX today, Cheryl Reed. Okay, Minnesota Lynx coach, for those of you who don't know, basketball, pretty successful. Great player. Oh, she was a great player in college. Great coach. She made this statement. Sport is a microcosm of society. We're going to come back to that. Cheryl's opportunity to compete is an example of this. Anyway, keep going. Title IX today, participation rates. Let's take a look. So a little bit of a history about Title IX and why Title IX, why we're here today. So we can't look at everything, and there's so much information. I'm just going to go right to the chase. Look at this, 300,000 female high school participants. 2018, so Friday, this is December 30th, 2018, this goes through. 3.4 million. Have we not had success with Title IX high school female participation opportunities has just grown. It's fantastic. What's the score, though? What's the score? So if we're keeping score, which we are in this game, female student-athletes improving. Title IX, yes, it is improving. Female athletic personnel is not so good. Not as many athletic directors. And we had a real spike. It's not so good. 2018, 2019, not as many. United States women's sports teams. So the number of sports teams is actually taking a turn. Not only in the number, but more importantly, there's less dollars for scholarship budgets, less dollars for recruiting budgets, and less dollars for operational budgets than the men's teams. Currently, there's really a lot of budget cuts, not only to athletic departments, but to higher education institutions right now. 2018 was a tough year, 2019. So what's happening is cutting to athletic. It's easier to cut sports, so there's not as many things and hats to wear. And the reason that we're getting away with it is no high school or no United States educational institution, high school or college, has ever had their federal dollars taken away due to lack of compliance in Title IX. Not one. Over all these years since 1972, they aren't reaching compliance, but yet there's no penalty. But some things are happening, especially in the last 5 years. The cutting of sports teams at the Division I and Division II levels is actually rising, unless there's a team or a university in a conference involved in a lawsuit. Then actually the reverse is happening. Conference schools are adding female teams for compliance. So in our area, we have some teams that are adding female sports. And why are they adding the sports? To get into compliance for Title IX. And the reason they want to get into compliance for Title IX is because there's some lawsuits going on, and pretty soon the federal government's going to wake up and say, you're not going to receive that federal funding. By the way, federal funding is quite a bit of an operational budget for the university. Title IX. So, it's a law. No person in the United States shall, on the basis of sex, be excluded from participation in, be denied the benefits of, or be subjected to discrimination under any educational program or activity receiving federal financial assistance. Now, athletics is just this much part of this law. This law is, first of all, you know, when I said I got to play college athletics, I was happy to be able to go to college. As, you know, your dentists, your nurses, your doctors, we couldn't even get into school. It was a big deal. The first school to let females in was the University of Minnesota in the whole United States. We were denied admission. So this is the law hasn't changed. This is the same law, but we're just talking today about athletics. Okay? So getting back to the law then, so since 1972, not one school or activity has had to give their federal dollars back. In other words, not one institution that has been found out of compliance
which, on a side note, there are very few institutions in compliance, that can't pay the penalty or the fine. What does it require? So with this, it requires that gender equity happen with participation opportunities. The gender must be equitable in the athletic financial assistance. And then the last one is one we kind of hear the most about. It has to be gender equitable in the equal treatment and benefits. And that means, I think the first two are pretty self-explanatory, that laundry list, that's like equipment, facilities, practice times, recruiting opportunities, budget, scholarships, scheduling, transportation, all those kinds of things need to be gender equitable. Okay? So, you have the law. We kind of said what's required, but how do you measure it? So when the judge, if it's a lawsuit, or if you have an OCR investigation, Office of Civil Rights, comes in, how do they measure it? What's the yardstick? How do they measure one of these tests? You just have to pass one of these tests. So the school or the university, now remember, it doesn't even have to be a school or university. It needs to be an educational program, so it could be a recreational league. It could be anything that receives federal dollars, right? So proportionality is having percentages of male and female athletes substantially proportionate to the percentage of male and female students enrolled in the college. So that's what the ratio needs to be. So if it's 50-50, 5,000 and 5,000, you've got 10,000 students, then your athletic department needs to be in compliance, right? So that's how you figure it.
And that was once again Dr. Lori Overts here on the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota as we're talking about Title IX at the CERN's History Museum. And now Carol Howell-Veenstra talks about what it means to her.
I've learned so much working with Lori on this and the details. It's been really fun. And we talked about what does trading places mean. For me, sometimes it's the easiest to summarize what's Title IX. That my sport experience and my twin brother's sport experience are so similar that we would love to trade places and we would be just as happy with that sport experience. So when you think about trading places, is that we both have new uniforms every 2 years. We both get on the same school bus or charter bus. We both have three coaches. We both have training room supplies. Any of that laundry list that she talked about, that's trading places. I think we need to stop, we need to pause, overtime. And what does a coach say? It's back to the basics, right? You go back to fundamentals that got you into the game and put you into overtime. Fundamentals. Sport is valuable to both boys and girls. What does it do? Helps build confidence. Career skills. We talk about all the women that are now leaders in their business. Teamwork, right? Huge teamwork. I have to set goals and try to achieve them. I'm comfortable. I'm trying to excel. Pressure. Has anybody in your job had a deadline to meet? Yeah, all the time. And best of all, maybe, competition can be fun. My ribbon representing something really fun. And I kept it in my scrapbook, and I still have them all. So how do we keep on winning? We hear a lot about safety. You see something, say something. That goes for discrimination, too. I can tell you it's been very hard sometimes when I see something. How do I say something? When do I say something? How do I do it without offending someone? But that's our job, is to see it also and then say something. It's our job to encourage girls when we see them in sports. You see somebody, a little girl riding her bike down the trail and you say, wow, way to go. And maybe way to wear your helmet, you know. But you're like, good job, you're doing great. All right, you encourage. You speak positively. You don't watch TV and go, oh, that girl's game or the women's game, they don't jump as high, they don't, you know, just have no. You honor where people are at. You take your niece, your granddaughter, a neighbor girl to go watch girls and women in sport. And you look at sport gifts. Out on that table, a friend of ours, Shelley Boyan Green, is writing books for kids, sport books, where the main character is a female, Shelley being the sports queen. And if you can, join us as we celebrate National Girls and Women in Sport Day at St. Paul History Center, February 5th.
And as Carol Howell-Veenstra wraps up their talk on Title IX, a look back and a look ahead, we're going to cut away from the audience questions and answer session, but it can be found online at kvsc.org under the podcast and Untold Stories of Central Minnesota tab, and the link to the extended podcast about this story. But we're going to wrap up today with the Stearns History Museum's Executive Director, Carrie Ezig, as she talks about their upcoming gala, as well as a call for artifacts about women in sports.
The other one is, and Carol brought up, it's really interesting, when we started this process for our gala and thinking about an exhibition for this year, a couple of our board members were like, yes, we're going to do an exhibit. And then I went, no, we're not. That's a really hard thing to do. But the reality was, and Carol's right, we didn't have enough in the collection for women's sports to be able to host an exhibition. We could do a couple of display cases, but I kind of looked at everybody, and the staff talked about it, and the board talked about it, and we said, you know what, this is a 3-year process, and this is a really great chance to launch this process. So we are collecting, specifically the women in athletics, women in sports, collecting the stories, collecting the artifacts, collecting the ribbons, and the books, and the uniforms, and the basketballs, and anything else that they might want to share. Because we couldn't even put together 2 or 3 cases, which is really too bad. I will say that the Melrose Museum has done a really good job of collecting materials on the women in Melrose and in the Melrose area. I can't speak to the other ones because I haven't had a chance to go through all of those collections yet, but I was really grateful that Melrose was willing to share some materials with us for our gala. On that note, we have 3 panels up in the lobby that are focused on women in the greater Stearns County area who are all leaders in sports. We have 2 other panels coming that will focus on the women in the St. Cloud area specifically. We kind of separated them out when we were doing the panels and previewed the first ones. Those are going to travel. One of my commitments when I started at the museum a year ago was to bring the museum, not just to bring people in, but to take the things out. And so those 5 panels will be at the Gabriel Media in their offices for 3 or 4 weeks. And then they're going to travel to the 4 Stearns banks that are in Stearns County and be in the various lobbies of the banks. So you'll be able to see those out and about in the community and out and about in the county. And then after that, they're actually going to go, because St. Cloud State was so instrumental in helping us pick photos, they will be at the St. Cloud State Archives sometime this fall. So look for those traveling shows as well as we continue to celebrate women in sports. Thank you to these 2 ladies. Let's give them a round of applause.
That was Stearns History Museum Executive Director Carrie Ezig wrapping up today's Untold Story of Central Minnesota. Dr. Lori Olfertz and Carol Howell-Veenstra visited the Stearns History Museum's Breakfast Club to talk about Title IX, a look back and a look ahead. For more information on the variety of programs available at the Stearns History Museum, which is open, even with all the construction going on around it, you can find it online at stearns-museum.org or link to it off of our website at kvsc.org, probably under one of the area events links, or also off the page for this story, which can be found in the podcast and Untold Stories of Central Minnesota tab, where you will also find the complete audio of the complete presentation of this month's Stearns History Museum Breakfast Club. This has been Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota is made possible through support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. It has been produced at KVSC, a proud member of Amper's Diverse Radio for Minnesota's communities.